The time is 9 o'clock on March 17th, 2023. I'm joined by Co-Chair Hoffman, Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Merrick, full compliment this morning. This morning, the committee will hear from the Department of Environmental Conservation on the administration's proposal to assume the 404 primacy wetlands permitting. Then the committee will take up two bills, Senate Bill 25, which is repealing a number of the funds, accounts, and programs, and Senate Bill 81, which is the Office of Victims' Rights Compensation. 404 permitting, Mr. Bates, if you want to come on up, which is with the Division of Water, come on up to the table with the trustee aide, Krista Kieneman. Go ahead with your presentation.
Okay. Good morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. Thank you for inviting the department and hosting a hearing on this very important topic. My name is Randy Bates. I'm the Director of Water with DEC. And it's great to be here on a Friday morning in a sunny Juneau with a full complement of Senate Finance members. Thank you. And happy St. Patrick's Day as well. There's some bold green at the table, which is wonderful to see. So appreciate you guys, appreciate this committee taking the time to have this hearing. This is not a new issue to the majority of you. We've been here, if not for 10 years, at least we were certainly front and center with you last year on this very particular issue. DEC is a primacy-based agency in many ways. Our primary mission is to protect human health and the environment. We're home to many programs, many of which gain their authority through the federal programs called primacy. Whoops. We have assumed primacy on a number of fronts, the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, and more. What that means is we take federal law and we implement it at a local level. We have in the Division of Water, we have assumed primacy on the 402 program, which is a wastewater discharge program. We pursued and gained authority to implement that back in, it was a phased approach for that particular program beginning in 2008 and ultimate primacy in 2012. We've been successfully implementing that since that time. Section 404, which is a complement, is a federal program. It's the dredge and fill program. It's currently administered by the Corps of Engineers. It's also a program under the Clean Water Act, and it's our intent, our desire to assume that program with funding from the legislature. I think most of you are aware that in 2013, the legislature passed Senate Bill 27, which, as you guys know, directed the DEC to take reasonable steps to assume the primacy of the 404 program. That was passed in 2013. That bill, that legislation still remains on the books. We are gaining some of our authority from that as we pursue 404 primacy. As I mentioned, the Clean Water Act Section 404 does regulate the discharge of dredge or fill material into waters of the United States. This means that almost every resource development project, whether it is a cabin in the woods, whether it is a housing project, a subdivision, whether it is a subdivision development in wetlands, whether it is a pad for oil and gas support, or whether it is a mine, all of the road, these are really infrastructure-based developments that absolutely require a 404 permit. Right now, that is administered by the Corps of Engineers. Last legislative session, there's some slides in here that you guys can. They're probably not unfamiliar to you. We've in the feasibility study, we've laid out Alaska has 174 million acres. 43% of Alaska is wetlands. This is critically important. Recognizing how much of Alaska is vulnerable to or subject to 404 permitting and the Corps' interpretation and implementation of that program. Senator Bishop at one point asked for a map, and we were happy to provide something that's in there last year. The green generally represents wetlands in Alaska. That is a massive amount of wetlands subject to Corps federal agency oversight. Members of the committee, last year we were before you with a proposal to develop that implementation program. At the end of the day, last session, and thankfully, the legislature provided $1 million support to the Department of Environmental Conservation to pursue a feasibility report, which is going to evaluate the assumption efforts, laying out the pros and the cons of that assumption, highlighting the challenges, the obstacles, as well as the benefits. We appreciate that $1 million. We're very thankful for it. It gave us the opportunity to really dive deep into this issue. We did provide that report to the legislature. I'm happy to say it was due on February 1st. We shared it with both the Senate and the House on, I believe it was January 30th. So we're ahead of schedule, under budget, if you will. That's how we run our shops at DEC. And it was a very compelling report from our perspective. It was a comprehensive report that we think did a bang-up job of presenting the very important issues of 404 assumption. It laid out both objectively the challenges that we're going to face, the obstacles we're going to face, but it also articulated, importantly, the benefits and the values that the state would gain in the assumption of that 404 effort. Not surprisingly, in that feasibility report, it does say that the report itself recommends the state of Alaska assume the 404 program over the assumable waters of the United States. So this is something we've been working towards for 10 years now. It was directed back in 2013. We've been evaluating this. We've been before you before. This report, as directed by you, came to the same conclusion. Now's the time. There's reason for it. Let's pursue this program as soon as you can.
Mr. Bates, just hang on. We have a question from Senator Wilson.
Hey, good morning to you. Top of the morning. I have a question on this report. The report's different than the study, correct? Is the study also online somewhere or can be given out? Because it says page 47 for this study, but this only, I think it was page 6, 7. So that's the full study.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, we interchangeably call it the feasibility study and the feasibility report. The report itself is what was produced. So this is the document. So I'm calling this document the feasibility report. It was actually. So if your question is page 46,
Mr. Chair, that's not my question. Is that online on, or somewhere it can be emailed to us? I don't need a full copy printed, but I just.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, if I'm certain that we've got that to you electronically. If we have not done that, I will make sure that we do get that to you however you would like it, whether it's electronic or written. That is available on our website. It is, I know that, I'm pretty sure that we delivered those electronically to all members of the Senate and the House.
Thank you.
Mr. Bates, I think that is correct. We have it in our office.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for that confirmation.
Go ahead.
Thank you. With the feasibility report in hand, it allowed us to recognize the value of the program, continue to endeavor to develop this. And what we did was we did not, you'll notice that we did not include this this proposed budget in the governor's release in December, but we waited until that feasibility report came out, confirmed the numbers that we had anticipated or we were looking at for the last several years, and then included these numbers that you see in the screen now, cost analysis, as part of that FY24 governor's amended budget. We wanted to make sure that what came out in the report matched up with what we were putting in through the governor's amended budget. And they do. There's some very minor discrepancies, but overall, what we're looking at for program development in fiscal year 24, and that's the ask on the table right now, is $4.964 million in general fund. That includes 28 permanent full-time positions in 24. That also includes all of the necessary pieces and components to stand up that program in 24, including training equipment, office setup, travel that may be necessary to train staff. We also have some important pieces in there for legal consultation, contract development, coordination with our sister agencies and other agencies. And that gets us started on that application development for the 404 program. Going forward in 25, there would be an additional four positions requested for a total program implementation of 32 staff, but you'll see that that number, that GF number, goes down from 4.96 to approximately 4.7 million, and that's because we're getting past some of the contract needs that we have as we develop that application. So base funding allocation going forward, 25 and beyond, is 32 staff, $4.7 million.
Sir Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got just a couple of questions. I don't doubt for a moment that the analysis from the department is on point as far as what it actually is here, as far as requesting 28 people. But I have some concerns. We're going to have some budgetary updates coming to the committee, and it's going to show that our revenue expectations have been reduced, which means we're going to have a bigger challenge dealing with the FY24 budget than anticipated a couple weeks ago and even last week. So we need to keep that in mind. But I'd also like to hear a little bit about how many other states have this primacy. And of these states, Florida has a lot of swampland, for as an example. What does it cost Florida? I assume we have a lot more wetlands in Florida by far, but substantially less people. But, you know, where is that structure in Florida after they've got it in? Because I'm kind of curious if this is an all-in cost or this just gets the door open.
Mr. Bates?
Yeah. Senator Stedman, through the chair, thank you for the question. Some of the specific details of the other states are going to be found in that feasibility report. I'll dig those out. They're not at the top of my tip of my tongue right now. I will say that Florida is the most recent state to assume 404 primacy. They did that in 2020. And as we've said on the record before, when you think of wetlands in the nation, the two states that stick out the most are Florida and Alaska. I believe roughly and generally Florida has probably the second most wetlands in the nation, but it's on a minuscule basis compared to Alaska. Alaska has 174 million acres of wetlands. I believe that Florida is, I venture a guess, of 10 to 17, something like that sticks in my mind as much of the information as I've read. That said, let me give you a little bit of perspective on 32 overall positions of what we're asking for. And then I'll compare that to the other three states, New Jersey, Michigan, and Florida, that have 404 assumption and why they're not necessarily equivalent if there's a difference in those numbers. I've been with the state for 23 years. I've overseen project management, permitting, staffing. I've seen overseen coastal and ocean management staffing. And prior to DEC Water, where we have 133 staff, I was at Habitat, where we oversaw permitting. I have a relative understanding of what it takes staffing-wise to develop permits that are both timely, legally defensible. And I absolutely believe that the analysis that's gone into this feasibility study, feasibility report, that says 32 staff is appropriate to implement a 404 program is on point. I think it's accurate. And there's a whole host of reasons for that. We're talking about 32 staff, and there are additional slides in here, Senator Stedman, that detail what those positions would look like organizationally. But we're looking at permitting, we're looking at compliance and enforcement, we're looking at administrative support for the program, as well as how are we going to have a database, GIS layer, all of that that's going to be necessary for the applicants to be able to figure out if they're in or out. And then move that permit activity forward. So the number 32 and 4.7 million as a base allocation to implement the program is very reasoned in its thinking in terms of what we need. That's very similar to what was proposed in 2013 as a program. It's what we had proposed last year. It bore itself out in the feasibility report. They analyzed how many permits we'd be looking at, how much activity we would anticipate to assume from the Corps. So 32 staff is a very, what I believe to be a tight number for successful implementation. On a comparative level to some of the other states, the three other states that have primacy right now, they all have higher numbers and they all have bigger budgets. But there's a reason for that. They are not necessarily equivalent in a comparative level. What we're proposing to do in Alaska is, and I'll show you this org chart here. So in your packet, I think it's, look for the color if you guys get color printers here. We have very dedicated 404 staffing anticipations, right? So we're going to bring in on that longitudinal organizational chart, you'll see dredge and fill program. We are bringing in and we plan to hire specific 404 permitting staff. They're going to be dedicated to the activity of reviewing permit applications and 404 needs. Further on that right side, you're going to see in blue and green, there's a compliance component that's going to have a single line to it. That compliance inspection group is going to be dedicated to 404 inspections. And then we have support staff, both in the information needs and administrative support, that are going to be dedicated to 404. There's not job sharing that's going to go on here with all of our other needs in water quality and village safe water, state revolving fund, 402 APTES. This is a very discreet plug-and-play program that we're proposing at DEC. Compare that to Florida, Michigan, and New Jersey. The staffing levels that they have, which may be two and three times higher than what the state of Alaska is proposing, those positions are implementing co-jointly coastal zone management reviews and permitting acts. They're implementing state permits that are outside WOTUS, either groundwater or surface water that is beyond the WOTUS boundaries. They're implementing other programs in addition to 404, so they're relatively subsidized. If you had to render that down to exactly what the 404 activity permitting staff looks like, it's probably relatively similar to Alaska on a relative basis.
Mr. Page, we have a question from Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just completed developing 20 acres under the 404 and in the process of developing another 120 acres and did not find it to be that cumbersome. The question that I have, I guess, is in the last 5 years, can you provide the committee with how much land and how many applicants in Alaska had to go through that process? And what do you anticipate the workload to be for the next 5 years? If you could provide that to my office, I'd greatly appreciate that.
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, just for clarity, 5 years worth of data on the number of core permits. Copy that.
And the acreage.
And pardon me?
The acreage.
And the acreage of that. Okay, we will reach out to our partners on that. Yes, thank you.
As well as those that have not been permitted or were denied permits because of that.
Mr. Chair, we've heard those rumors. That may be a tougher number to get to, but we'll certainly give you a response on that as well.
Okay. Senator Wilson's got a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking at your budgetary items and your cost analysis, you just have legal consultation in the first couple of years. But in your summary of your report, you talk about state courts are more knowledgeable because these suits currently right now are litigated in federal courts, but then they will be litigated in state courts. So do you feel that there might be an increase to the Department of Law? Or who's going to be litigating these cases on the behalf of the state of Alaska? And is there going to be additional costs for that?
Mr. Bates?
Thank you for the question. Senator Wilson, through the chair, what you don't see necessarily in this. And I put up another slide for those of you watching. This is probably more detailed than most people give, but this is exactly how we're going to spend our money. This particular sheet is from FY24. I can show you something similar to 25, which is going to be a base allocation going forward. One of the line items you'll see, and it's under 3,000 contractual RSA to the Department of Law. You'll see that in 24, it's 175,000, and we expect that we need Department of Law's support as we develop the program description and the application. Going forward, you'll also see that there's an RSA to the Department of Fish and Game at 250,000 and an RSA to DNR Natural Resources for 120,000. We need support to develop this application, and we need these particular agencies, law, fish and game, and natural resources, to assist us in that. They have a role in the development of this 404 permit and application. That's 24. That's also expected in 25 and beyond. We've built in this $4.7 million base allocation support, specific support for law, DNR, and fish and game so that they can help us implement this program going forward. The 402 program, as an example, we have approach it differently. We have a budget development process at DEC in the Division of Water, and we have an RSA with the Department of Law as it is for all of the various issues that I have to deal with, Village Safe Water, State Revolving Fund, 402 APTES permitting, anything else that I need law support for. This would be in addition to that. And right now what we anticipate would be that going forward, the money that we've identified as support for law would be necessary to support, provide their support against any of the appeals or litigation that may come our way on a 404 project.
Thank you.
Senator Wilson? Senator Sidney?
Oh, just back on my previous question, Mr. Chairman, I don't doubt these numbers are accurate for what they are. My concern is this isn't going to be the whole package that we get into possibly a program we can't get out of. My understanding, it's a one-way door. And I'm not, totally accurate on these numbers, so maybe you could help us with like Florida. My understanding is they have something like 400 employees working in this arena. And they have a substantial backlog of permits of 1,800 permits. And I want to make sure that we don't inadvertently go down a road that this is just a fraction of what it's going to cost the operating budget of the state with no real net benefit when you start looking at the costs.
So, is it true that it is a one-way road? That once you enter that door, we can't come back out?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stedman, the answer is no. I came back from D.C. late last night or early this morning, and we were meeting with all of the other states, EPA and some other federal agencies. The funding of 404 was a significant conversation with those other states, with EPA in the room. Alaska is not the only state actively pursuing 404 right now. Nebraska, I think Minnesota, there's one other state that we've heard there are three states, maybe four, that are actively pursuing 404. Every other state that was represented at that meeting back there in D.C. expressed desire and support for 404, the want to get into the world of 404. Not all of them even have 402, the Wastewater Discharge Authority. Not all of them have these programs the way Alaska does. Funding of this type of program is of paramount concern and one of the major hurdles for states to get into this arena. We are working that front through our representative groups, ECOS, I can't remember the acronym, all of the acronyms, ECOS. Commissioner Bruni is a member of ECOS. They have a resolution on funding of 404 for states to get that from the federal government. AQUA, which is Association of Clean Water Administrators, which is I'm a member of, I'm on the board of that group. We are pursuing that with EPA and the budget issues. This is a major concern for states to be able to assume an important program like 404. We're doing everything we can to find other alternatives than general fund monies. Commissioner Bruni has reached out and had conversations with our delegation. We have a letter going to Senator Murkowski, and they are Senator Murkowski, Senator Sullivan are for sure supportive, and I believe Representative Peltola is supportive of finding a path forward for federal funding for a program like this. This is one of the very few primacy programs where there is no federal support for it. In addition to federal funding and some GF long-term, we do believe that a fee-based structure is going to be important to incorporate too. And we do have a letter most recently, I think it was submitted to this committee from CAP, Council of Alaska Producers, that supported the concept of fees for a pay-to-play kind of concept, some level of increased fees to be able to assume the 404 permitting program. So we certainly think that there's room to roam there on working with the industry to help offset the cost of this program so it isn't entirely GF-based. For the first couple of years, it's going to be GF-based because we don't have a permit base, and we need to be able to develop this program, develop the application. The other component, there was a lot to unpack in some of the questions. When we take primacy on this program, and if that is July of 2025, if that's our general time frame, 2 years, the day we turn the key to the state's program, we have to be successful implementing that program. There is no partial assumption. There is no phased approach. We have to be able to do jurisdictional determinations, determining what the wetlands are. We have to have all of the nationwide permits transitioned over, general concurrences, our planning process going forward so that the industry, the applicants are not hindered in their permitting processes. And we need to bring those staff on as soon as we can so that they can build that experience, knowledge. We can provide the training so that we're successful the day we take that program over. We can't wait. Time is money.
Mr. Bates, I think we can get into the mechanics of what the program is going to do and what it's going to look like in the future. But I'd like you to comment on the what Senator Stedman just brought up, that the numbers that we're seeing in front of us may not be all the numbers that we're going to be handed to if when we take over the program.
Understood. Mr. Chair, and back to the focus question of Senator Stedman. As I mentioned, I believe that the 32 staff and the $4.7 million base allocation funding is going to be accurate. It is a number that we stand by. It's a number that has been floated for 10 years now as a means to move this program forward. If you look back at our APTES program, our 402 wastewater discharge program, and what the proposal was in 2008 for staffing levels and funding levels, we were accurate. There has been one change since that time, since the implementation of that 402 program, and that was in 2019 where we added four staff. And that was that addition of four staff approved by the legislature here was in response to EPA's evaluation of our compliance and enforcement program. They didn't think at that point that we were doing enough in a particular field, and they said you should put some more energy and effort towards that. That translated to four additional FTEs. We came for approval, and that's been it. We got that approval in 2019, and EPA has since reflected and commented both publicly and privately, Alaska, you're doing a doggone good job. You've responded to what our request was, and you're essentially the shining star in the nation for compliance and enforcement. So,
follow-up, Senator Sidney.
I have another question, so I'll yield the floor and come back in turn.
Senator Keough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Mr. Bates. One of the challenges we have with the way we do things in this building, and it's not unique to you or this presentation, is that the chart doesn't have the future lawsuit costs. Those end up showing up in the Department of Law's budget or a special appropriation for statehood defense or something, right? And like the permit workers, today that's 100% federal funds. We don't have to worry about them splitting with us because they cover it. So I guess that I have two questions going to future cost. And one is, just to bore down on that 32 staff number, how many FTEs do the feds use now for Alaska permits? But the other is, can you help us with anticipated legal expenses? We have a tendency, permits have a tendency to end up in court.
Mr. Beats?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Senator Keel, thank you for the question, and good morning to yourself as well. Appreciate the question. The Corps of Engineers has 48 permitting staff, 48, which would be the equivalent of what we have laid out in our organization chart, 48 staff for the District of Alaska. The other piece that we looked at, and this is included in the feasibility report as well, is, and this gets to one of the questions that Senator Hoffman asked, when we looked at what the permit world of the Corps of Engineers is on an annual basis, it's about 775 actions a year. That includes exclusions, CAT X's. It includes EAs, these types of activities that necessitate a 404 permit. Those are 48 staff managing 775 actions a year. What we looked at is, because we don't get all of the waters under a 404 program, we get a certain subset of the waters of the U.S., that is going to equate to what appears to be about 75% of those actions. So 75% of 775 actions is going to result in the state acting on 581 permit actions over the course of a year. And so if you look at what the Corps has, 775 actions divided by 48 staff, it's about 16 actions a year per staff, if they're all permitting. 75% of that load, 581 actions, 32 staff. We're very equivalent in what we're going to be proposing for a state 404 permit, state 404 run program. 18 actions per staff would be what the expectation is. So, Senator Hoffman, that I'll get you a specific answer to the number of actions that have occurred over the course of 5 years. But Senator Keel, that gets you the number of staff that the Corps has. To your question about legal costs, as I said, we've built in support in our both 24 and the anticipation of 25. We've built in that legal support to help guide us on permit actions as well as defense of those permit actions. It is, I know Commissioner Bruni's perspective and certainly mine, that we utilize law frequently in the development of these permits. I would rather build a proper permit that is defensible than issue a permit and then ask them to defend us, right? So I would rather upfront use them to help craft our permit to make sure it is legal, compliant with the law, and defensible in the end of the day. That will save costs, both legally in the long term in court. We don't want to go to court. We don't want to have these conversations in court. We don't want a court deciding things that we should. We have, you know, it's our discretion. It's our program. We should know how to run it. We should do it legally. So, again, this gets to Senator Stedman's concern and certainly some of yours. I believe that the cost that we've built in to this base allocation of 4.7 includes legal support, and I believe that it is sufficient to defend those appeals that are going to come our way. We may see a little more in the front end as we work out the infancy of the program and how we implement this. We may see some folks that are going to want to challenge that. That's fine. We'll deal with that. But I expect that as we go on, those challenges will be fewer and lesser, and certainly we will gain experience from those as well, and we won't have, you know, those costs, big born costs in the future. Senator?
Senator Merrick has a question.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Good morning. My question is, how much does it cost to apply for a 404 permit, and is that the same whether you're an individual building a small cabin or a large company doing a resource development project?
Thank you. Senator Merrick, through the chair, thanks. Again, that's a wonderfully bold green outfit. I appreciate the joy on a March 17th. The Corps of Engineers currently charges $10 for a residential permit. They charge $100 for a commercial permit. That, my understanding, is the extent of their permit fees across the board. We do at DEC have, when there's a 404 permit issued, we have a 401 certification process associated with that. So the Corps may charge $100 for a oil and gas project or a mining project or something else of commercial nature. We have a 401 certification charge cost with our review of that permit. And so those are not $10 or $100. They are actually, they go to fund a portion of the cost it takes our permitters to review that activity. So some of my papers are in my lost luggage from last night, but I believe one of the, you know, somewhere our 401 certifications cost somewhere between $100 and $2,000, depending on what type of activity it is, whether it's a big acreage impact or a smaller project like a cabin. But that is representing the cost it takes our permitters to review that activity. It's the recovery of permit fees. And we have that across the board for our 402 program as well as our 401 program.
Thank you.
Solid, Senator Merrick. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure where to place this question, but you know, the crux of it is mission creep that we need to always be concerned about. It seems like we get into some of these programs and they just grow and grow and grow. So dealing with wastewater discharge, and I don't know if this is, I don't think it's going to be under 404, could be under 402 or 301, H waivers, dealing with hatcheries.
Sure.
We've had a lot of concern from some of the local hatcheries on the requirements being requested by DEC exceed the federal guidelines lately on discharge. And I was wondering if you could help us with that as far as how do we, if you can recall offhand with that issue in particular, and then the broader question that presents is mission creep. How do we make sure that doesn't happen?
Mr. Beats.
Senator Stedman, thank you. Through the chair. You could reserve my seat here every year if you chose to on a permit du jour, whatever the case is. Last year it was 301. This year it's hatcheries. Obviously these are of interest to a variety of individuals. Three answers to your question, Senator Stedman. Number one, Commissioner Bruni has made a particular point to tell our story. He's asked all the directors, all the agency staff, tell our story better. Go get out there, tell our story. It's not an easy story to tell when we're talking about water quality standards, the industry having to meet or develop additional requirements to meet those standards. It's not always a popular story, but it's a very important story. And so I appreciate you asking the question because it gives us another forum right here to talk about this particular story of hatcheries and how they're affected by a reissuance of a permit. Number two, you made a very compelling case right there for the 404 program. The fact that the hatcheries have come to Senate Finance and raised an issue, the fact that the hatcheries have come to the governor's office, who is now inquiring about this, the fact that I have met with the hatcheries a number of times is a reason why permitting should be retained by the state of Alaska and why this committee and why this body should pursue 404 assumption. Decisions made by Alaskans, the industry can approach individuals like me, individuals like you, easier than they can the federal agencies to get some effect. And that makes programs like 404 and 402 much more palatable, much easier to implement in Alaska. We understand the issues. We're willing to work with the industry, and I'm accountable to you and to them. And that's not the case necessarily in a 404 program were EPA to be implementing a permitting program for hatcheries, they may not have as much interest in working with. So thank you for making the case on the assumption of 404 through the hatchery permit. Number three, specific to the hatcheries, we have worked closely with them. We're in the middle of a permitting process on the reissuance of that hatchery permit. We have made a number of concessions in the permit based on the comments that the hatchery folks have made. We have heard what they've had to say. We understand some of the concerns that they have both fundamentally and financially with the permit, and we're continuing to work with them. Our goal with the hatcheries, with the seafood industry, with the mining industry, with the oil and gas industry, with the publicly owned wastewater treatment facilities is objective implementation of the water quality standards. Nobody gets a get out of jail free card. Everybody has to meet the same water quality standards regardless of what the industry is. What we are doing with the hatcheries is trying to find a regulatory path forward, recognizing some of the challenges that they have with implementation of a couple key provisions of the permit. Some of that will require a mixing zone, the development of a mixing zone, so that their discharges can meet the water quality standards. Some of that could require additional regulatory endeavors, site-specific criteria, intake credits, or some other pieces. There are paths forward for every one of these hatcheries. Some of those paths do cost money. The development of a mixing zone, for example, Senator Stedman, is roughly in the neighborhood of about $20,000 of modeling and contract support. So we recognize the financial impact of a requirement like this to develop a mixing zone for the discharge of water that exceeds pH standards. And that's unfortunate. However, there's two paths forward on that one. Number one, we have communicated this financial cost to Senator Murkowski's staff, who's working on earmarks. So we'll see if there's a funding support for that. As well, this is the Senate Finance Committee. If there's a desire from this committee to put money forward to support the hatchery industry, you could certainly entertain that, or maybe they've come to you on that request. So for that particular issue, for mixing zones, as an example, we are trying to find a path forward with the industry that we're regulating. They've got some ZOD or some zone of deposit issues. The seafood industry is held to a particular standard. We've had to rewrite what our zone of deposit requirements are and how we're implementing that on a statewide basis.
Mr. Beach,
would you like to interrupt
me? Senator Hoffman.
I think that Senator Stedman's question is primarily, why is the department taking standards that the federal government have and have a higher standard to the state of Alaska, which is causing not only for the, for the hatcheries, but for the processors. They've been contacting me, and the additional requirements that your department is putting forward are costing millions of dollars to these plants. And the question is, why is the state of Alaska going above and beyond the requirements that the federal government have? And if that's the case, the same concerns are multiplied tenfold if we give you 404 and you do the same actions. You say one thing, but when I talk to the people of my district, I hear something completely different. You are not working with them. You are working against them. You are trying to implement stricter standards than the federal government. That is the problem. Why is this happening? Why are we, the state, putting additional requirements on an industry that provides thousands of jobs to the state of Alaska?
Right.
This is the question I think that you need to answer. That's the point that I think Senator Stedman was inquiring about, not all of this stuff and the fluff that you're talking about. That's the question.
Mr. Bates?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hoffman, thank you. Senator Stedman, I'll get back to your issue. EPA, under the Clean Water Act, EPA sets basic fundamental standards for water quality. The state either adopts those particular standards, or on a state-by-state basis, we can adopt water quality standards for specific to Alaska or Florida or New Jersey, any other state that's out there. We are active in that endeavor. So we look at aluminum, mercury, PFAS is coming up as a major component, residue, bacteria. We have standards across the board for pollutants of concern in Alaska. Oftentimes we adopt what EPA has set as a national standard. Sometimes we pursue a state-specific standard if it makes sense in Alaska. That has to go through approval process at the EPA level. So the EPA sets a base standard of water quality for the nation. We can supplement that with more stringent standards as necessary. That's just normal course of action for Alaska, and it's in the interest of protecting our quality of water, the uses of that water, and the people that depend upon that water and the aquatic resources that come from it. So in this particular case, you've got hatcheries that are producing fish, and they are in need of high-quality water to produce those fish. There is an impact on the water when they use it, and when they do discharge it, that water needs to be treated to a level that is non-impactful for those that are downstream of that water. This is the same concept that is applicable to the mining industry, the oil and gas industry, the publicly owned treatment facilities. We don't want bacteria, for example, affecting clam harvest downstream of a wastewater discharge facility. So we have standards in place to make sure that the treatment is effective so that the risk to human health and the environment is minimized.
Honorable Senators Stedman or Hoffman?
My understanding is that the requirements are above the federal requirements, and there's concern about that. There's no doubt about that.
Mr. Chair, sorry.
And then the potential mission creep issue. And I would layer that on top of the concern of the overall budget. Frankly, Mr. Chairman, if we're going to employ 35, 32, 40, whatever it ends up being, people, even 25, we've got to watch our head count across all our agencies. And I'm not so sure that this is the best use of funds at this moment. Also, it's like two separate issues dealing with this one proposal in front of us.
Sir, how many are to put a finer point on that?
And the problem that I foresee, and this is an industry, a major industry, the fishing industry, whether it be hatcheries or processing facilities, I haven't heard concerns about the water quality issue that that you allude to by either the processing plants or the hatcheries. So, but I'm hearing from the industry that we are having the state implementing policies, as Senator Stedman say, that are much stricter than the federal requirements. And this is potentially causing additional financial burdens, which when it comes to profitability, they may have to cut jobs that are Alaskan jobs in order to make things meet. It's one thing to want the purest water in the world, but to get there, we need to go an extra mile. We're letting the perfect getting in the way of the possible.
Sure.
And that is the concern I think that the industry is voicing to me. The overreach that Senator Stedman is talking about, much stringent policies. Sure, everybody in the state of Alaska wants clear water, but are the changes that you're proposing that are more stringent than what the federal government required, which reduces the potential of jobs, puts a much higher financial burden on one of the biggest producers of export in the state of Alaska, our salmon. Are they justified? And what I'm hearing from industry is they are not justified, but the department is unwilling to reevaluate that and come up with a compelling argument to take that position. So when it comes to 404, I believe that the same thing may happen, and we put, instead of the industry, we could potentially be putting cabin makers, builders, and others into the same situation where they have to come up with additional dollars above and beyond the requirements that are being placed by the federal government. So if we can't resolve the 402 problem, why in the heck are we wasting our time in considering 404?
Mr. Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me a response. Senator Stedman, Senator Hoffman, thank you. Your points are made. I'll come back with two, and I know you guys don't want to get into the esoteric conversation about what I think we have or don't have, but this is relevant for this conversation and whether 404 moves forward or not. Number one, we can do no more, no less than you authorize us to do. And so we're implementing what we believe to be within the spirit and the intent of the sideboards that have been set up for us, water quality wise. So I think we're absolutely legal. The other thing specific to the hatcheries is, and I'll put this on the record, I've already communicated this with my commissioner and my staff. That hatchery permit is on administrative extension right now. And so it was set to expire. It's probably set to expire within the last couple months. We've extended that because we have not resolved these issues yet. We hear the concerns that the hatcheries are bringing, the operators are bringing. We're working with them. Right now, I don't anticipate we're going to resolve these issues in the short term. So we have no intention of putting that permit out there as final. We're looking for paths forward, both funding-wise and compliance-wise, so that we can all agree that we get clean water and we have a path forward regulatorily that is as non-invasive, non-impactful as we can for the hatcheries themselves. I know that I've seen the letters that are coming to you. I believe they're speaking truthfully about the impacts, but I also think watch the process play out with us, because I think we're fully engaged with the industry. We're working with them to find a path forward on water quality standards so we have clean water coming out of their facilities, but we have a path forward that is least impactful financially to them as we can make it, recognizing there has got to be some improvement of their treatment.
Okay. Follow-up? Sir Hawkinson, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Bates. Way back when, about 20 minutes ago, we talked about being back in D.C. and just getting back and talking with other colleagues from other states and as well as our delegation about trying to bring federal dollars if we say we go forward and assume this primacy, because this is one of only the few federal programs where the state has primacy that federal dollars don't follow. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, that is accurate. The federal government does not provide specific support for the 404 program.
Follow-up?
Senator Bishop.
401 and 402, do you get federal dollars to help offset the cost from those programs?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, we do get 402 funding support, yes.
And you're actively seeking right now through the delegation to get federal dollars for primacy if we were to do 404. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, the answer is yes. If I could, a little further, EPA received a 19% increase in their budget this year. That is not trickling down to states, and it's not being portioned out into 404 programs like this that are important to us.
Last question.
Senator Bishop.
There is a way to unwind primacy from a state if we assume primacy. Am I right or wrong?
Mr. Bates?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, the answer is yes. We could return a program like 402 or 404 if we were so aggrieved.
Thank you.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since Mr. Bates's example of people collecting their cockles downstream from the wastewater plant where they pay the rates probably applied to my community, I think I'll jump in and see if I can't give him whiplash. we've had some conversation about the hypothetical federal funding. I'll give you a scenario that's not so hypothetical. Once I saw appropriators get really mad at DEC. But the situation I'm talking about isn't in the last 5 minutes, in the last 15, 20 years, and I saw the budget get whacked pretty severely. So the appreciating the delicate dance, if this number of permit workers drops precipitously, how do Alaskans who count on clean water make sure that DEC is not going to just tell industry yes, and how does industry make sure that DEC is not just going to tell them no or make them wait 4 years, depending on, you know, who's on the third floor? What is the safeguard if this 100% general funded program gets decimated in the budget?
Mr. Bates.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Keel, I want to paraphrase what you just asked to make sure that I understand it. So not in 24, but as an ongoing basis, were the general funds for that implementation aspect of the program to be cut, what does that mean? Senator Keel, I'm not sure I have a very good response. I think once we assume a program like 402, like RCRA, like AIR or 404, the expectation is we're going to continue to fund it to the extent we need to fund it. Now, that said, we've already also talked about other aspects of funding that could offset that general fund investment in a program in the state like this. So right now, what I've said is 32 staff, $4.7 million, general funded. I don't anticipate, I can't imagine, my background doesn't suggest that 32 is a weak number. It's a strong number. We believe that's what we need. If it's a tweak, if it's a different number, it's going to be a tweak in that 32 of one or two, or like 402, four out of 50 at some point, either up or down. If there's a decrease in the permitting load that we're going to carry, we could reduce that funding. Minor tweaks to that number. So then we look at what are the other sources of funding that could make up that general fund? Because I understand the concerns about general fund support for this program. There is federal funding that we're pursuing. We want that federal funding. The other states are going to pursue it. We're building a coalition. We're building some momentum on this conversation. Alaska is not the only one that's interested in 404. There's a number of other states that were this hurdle addressed, there would be a wholesale woohoo, and people, states would pursue this. The other aspect that we intend to pursue for funding of this program is permit fees. There's some offset that can be provided for the 401 certifications on 404 permits. Those permit fees that are currently associated with core permits, $110. And as you guys have, there is at least a group of permittees in the state who recognize there could be some additional permit costs associated with this, and they're willing to accept that increase in permit fees. That gets us to hopefully a relative offset of that $4.7 million GF. And then, of course, if the state's economy is such that it begins to blossom because we're controlling our own destiny, we're protecting the environment the way we want to through 404, the economy is booming, maybe whatever the case, there's interest. That just means there's increased permit fees that may be associated with it. It's going to further offset some of this GF cost. Mr. Chair, Senator Keel, if I could, I'll also be very realistic in the FY24 numbers. And this isn't a question you've asked, but it's certainly one I want to raise with you as we look at this program cost. Right now, what we said is $4.9 million in FY24. One of the challenges that you all have raised with me at different times is, how are you going to hire 28 staff in a single year? And is that going to start July 1st? The answer is no. Realistically, that's not going to happen off the at the get-go of the fiscal year. 28 staff just don't materialize and say, I want to take on 404. We have a very structured, tiered approach to how we're going to hire individuals into these positions that are in your org chart. And we have recognition that budget-wise, we're not going to be able to fill all of those positions for all 12 months. How we develop budgets is a 12-month position for every one of these staffers, 28 positions. Realistically, I'm going to hire 5 individuals as quickly in July as I can. Then they're going to tier those hirings down from there. Those are going to be the program manager types, the leaders of those sections, either permitting, compliance, or administration. They're then, once they're in place in July, they're going to structure and recruit for the subsequent positions. And we're going to have 4 different tiers or waves of hiring processes. So 4.9 million, particularly as we relate it to the personal services number, in here, 3.48 million. In all honesty, we're not going to spend 3.48 million in general fund in fiscal year 24. It's just not possible, because that assumes a 12-month position starting July 1st. And there just isn't a realistic approach. There isn't a realistic expectation or opportunity to hire at that point. We have to budget it that way, and that's how you guys are seeing it. But the realism is, we're probably somewhere south of $3.5 million on personal services. I hope that brings some honesty to this conversation about how much we're spending, particularly on personal services. And that's the one area of this bill that probably has some flexibility.
Any further questions by members of the committee? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bates, maybe a less controversial issue. Let's talk about the Pebble Mine. We are where we are, and with your 20 years of vast experience, and these are state lands, and the state has chimed in to some extent. But what do you see the outcome if we were under 404? And the Pebble Mine today, and where do you see it going if that legislation, the funding were passed?
Sure. Senator Hoffman, through the chair, thank you very much. I appreciate that question and the desire to address that issue. Number one, the authority that EPA used, 404C, is unaffected by the state's assumption of the 404 program. While they both have 404 in them, 404C, the authority of EPA, is unaffected by this program, okay, first and foremost. Second, I'm not sure that this project is entirely out of the Corps of Engineers' hands if the state has the 404 program, just because of some of the location and dynamics. We don't assume all WOTUS in a 404 program. The Corps is still going to retain some of those waters. But what would be different would be the conversation would most likely still be happening on the impacts. What the Corps of Engineers and EPA did was short-circuit that conversation, where we didn't have a chance at DEC to issue our view of whether that project would comply with water quality standards. Fish and Game didn't have a chance to weigh in on whether they could permit a project like that for fish habitat and fish permitting reasons under their authorities, and DNR didn't have a chance to weigh in under their permitting authorities. What EPA did was make a decision without considering that the robustness, the comprehensive nature of the state's own rules that are set up to address projects of all sorts like this, whether it's a hatchery or whether it's a mine. So I'm certainly not going to predict a different outcome for Pebble or any other project, but I can tell you that under a 404 program, we would be having a conversation in state, and it would allow, having the 404 program would allow that conversation to at least run through the completeness of the gamut of who wants to have a say, who has permits at the table, how are we dealing with these concerns comprehensively from a dredge and fill permitting program, from a wastewater discharge permitting program, from a fish habitat permitting program, from a state lands, from a regional corporation perspective.
Okay. Let's continue on with your slides and wrap it up, and because this discussion could go on for a very long time as we deal with this multi-million dollar issue. At ease. Senate Finance Committee meeting back to order. Okay, Mr. Bates.
You want more? Mr. Chair, thank you.
Question. New question. Hypothetical, we have primacy. 404. The EPA, Army Corps of Engineers, do you do a quarterly desk audit, annual desk audit? If I've got a big operation, I'm applying for a new permit that's outside the GP, right? General permit, standalone permit for dredge and fill. Does that permit, after you've blessed it, does the feds have to bless it as well for cursory review?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bishop, we do have Julie Pack on the line, who is our Assistant Attorney General. She deals with, she has dealt with some of these issues and responded on the record. She is available for us, and I'll give you a quick response and see if she wants to weigh in. Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, if she's
Please,
online.
Go ahead.
So EPA has a couple paths forward here. So like the 402 program, EPA retains oversight authority on our permitting, right? So they're going to be involved in that review, and they are in all of our permits right now. We share with them what we're doing, how we're doing it, why we're doing it, and some of that rationale. They get to look over our shoulder on all of these things. That's written into the Clean Water Act. It's written into what our program description is. So if they have a concern with a permit, how we're approaching a permit, they typically raise those. Gene McCabe, who you've seen here before, he oversees that permitting side of my office. They have regular check-ins, and I think it's probably every 2 weeks, and they bring up a list of permits that they're working through. If EPA has a concern with one of those permits, how we're approaching it, they will raise them at that point, try and work through those conversations and concerns. If we're not able to address EPA's concerns, they have a very formal process that they can object to that permit. And that kicks off a very formal proceeding under the Clean Water Act and our program description where we have to resolve those issues. So they could ultimately object in the permitting process. The other avenue that EPA retains, they do have just friendly oversight of us, and they're going to give us critiques on programmatic implementation, both of our compliance and enforcement side, our permitting side, and our water quality side, but they continue to retain their oversight authority under, they're going to oversee more of the program under 404 as the state implements it than they would under the Corps' implementation of it, but they retain their 404C authority as it currently exists.
Thank you.
Ms. Pack, are you online? And do you remember the question?
I'm satisfied with his answer.
Okay. I figured I'd be able to answer, but if I needed help, I was going to seek her. So,
okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Members of the committee, that's the end of the presentations. You guys have you're aware. It's a $4.9 million budget item. I think that Interestingly, one last piece on time is money. Thank you for the $1 million this past year. I look forward to seeing progress on this as we develop this. Time is money. The industry has said so. Interestingly, one of the conversations I had with Nebraska, their own DOT is going to save $3 million on permit fees when Nebraska assumes the 404 program. So building of roads is a timing issue. What they've said, and I've got the report, I'll see if I'm able to share it, but what they've said is their own agency is going to save the money that it takes to implement the 404 program through cost savings, just from a timing perspective and from an awareness perspective on how they're going to permit projects. This does not yet get into the concept of compensatory mitigation and how much money savings there could be in terms of just straight payout for compensatory mitigation for our own agencies or the industry that's out there. We still have to do mitigation, but there's other ways to do it than just purchasing land for set-aside reasons. There's water quality improvement packages we can engage in. There's other things that are meaningful to improve the health of our environment and our you know, protection of humans. So time is money. We certainly believe that this is an appropriate investment in the state's future, both for our protection and management of our environment, but also for the economy that would result from having more control over our own permitting processes in state. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this time.
Actually, we have a question from Ms. Senator Keough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't going to bring that one up, but I saw that in the persuasion report here. And it seemed to imply that that's not available now, but I can think of at least one project down here where we did compensatory mitigation, didn't lock anything up, did a bunch of fill and pile and whatnot. Can you clarify?
Through the chair, Mr. Senator Keough. Compensatory mitigation is a concept that's embedded in the Clean Water Act. So activities have to go through a sequencing process of avoid impacts where you can, minimize impacts to the extent you can avoid them. And if you simply can't minimize those impacts, you have to mitigate for those impacts. Compensatory mitigation is a rule that we would implement through the 404 program the state has. The difference between what the Corps is doing and what the state could do is a choice. The Corps has that choice. It's as Julie says, it's baked into the law right now. The Corps is choosing, and we had this conversation with them, they're choosing to take an easier path of having a developer or a permittee simply lay out cash that goes to a trust organization that then locks up land or sets it aside in perpetuity or for a number of years. So if somebody's going to have an impact on wetlands and that has to be offset through compensatory mitigation, they'll pay $1 million, and that just simply goes to set aside pristine wetlands that currently exist so that they're off limits for development going forward for a number of years. 100 years, I think, is the minimum. Perpetuity is a little bit longer than that. The Corps has the ability to pursue other means of mitigation. They just typically don't, and they're self-admitting in that. They've just got a process that they found successful that is easy for both the permittee and the permitting agency. We at DEC see this as an opportunity where we can make an improvement in the water quality and protection of our environment going forward. We would prefer to have control over that mitigation process so that we can find meaningful improvements in areas proximal to that project that don't just involve locking the lands up or setting, requiring money just to be paid into a fund for a bank.
Mr. Bob Sankey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yep, that's what I mean. We've done it here with the Corps. I'll get you the documents.
Yes. Thank you.
If there's no further questions by members of the committee, look, thank you for coming up this morning. Certainly is a issue that's going to be on our minds. With that, I'll call for a brief at ease. I call the Senate Finance meeting back, committee meeting back to order. We have two bills that were, have previously been heard. I'd like to bring them back in front of the committee, take up amendments. If it's the will of the committee, maybe move these things out. The first one is Senate Bill 25. I'd like to ask Ken Alpers, my committee aide, to go and talk about this. It's a bill by Senator Kaufman repealing the inactive state funds. This bill was first heard on February 8th. We have a committee substitute for this bill. Members have received these before the hearing. Senator Stedman, is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 25, Work Order 33, LS-0237, /B, as our working document.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. I'll object for purposes of discussion. Mr. Alper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ken Alper, staff to Senator Olson and the Senate Finance Committee. What you have before you is a draft committee substitute. As you may recall, when Senator Kaufman introduced this bill, the bill really does two things. First, it sets up a process where the Director of Legislative Finance would make recommendations every 2 years for unused or obsolete funds that might be recommended for removal. And then it was affirmatively removing six specific funds that were named in the bill. What the committee substitute does is reduce that list to five. It was the will of the committee, my understanding of the chair, is that we retain the Southeast Energy Fund and not call for its immediate removal. The other five recommended funds remain in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Elber. Are there any questions by members of the committee? If not, I'll go ahead and remove my objection. Are there any other objections to adopting version B? Seeing none, this version B is now before the committee. Are there any amendments? Any discussion on the bill? Before we move the bill, I want to point out that the fiscal note on this bill is zero. The reason we've been hearing in the Senate Finance Committee is that we are its first and only committee referral. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 25 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Without objection, Senate Bill 25 is moved from committee. We'll take a brief at ease and sign the committee report. We'll get ready for Senate Bill 81. Senate Finance Committee back to order. We'll continue on with Senate Bill 81. We're back on the record. The next bill is Senate Bill 81 by the Legislative Council, which is the Office of Victims' Rights Compensation. We previously heard this bill on March 14th. Do we have any amendments? No amendments? Do we have any discussion on it? Before we move this bill, I understand there's a small issue with the fiscal note for this bill. Mr. Alper from my staff will explain the issue.
Thank you for the chair. Again, for the record, Ken Alper, staff to yourself. The fiscal note is fine. It's $107,000. The bill, as you understood it, there are four attorneys at the Office of Victims' Rights. They would be getting the same 20% raise that all other state attorneys got last year. They were sort of missed in the process. However, this same $107,000 appears in the operating budget as a governor's recommended increment in the legislature department. So we just want to make sure we don't double fund it, and I wanted to get it on the record that as you move the bill with the fiscal note, that you should also reject the increment so we don't accidentally fund them twice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Elper. Any discussion on that point? No discussion. We have a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 81 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Without objection, Senate Bill is moved from committee. We'll have a brief at ease to sign the committee report. put that back on the record. Senate Bill 81 has been moved from committee. This concludes today's calendar. Our next meeting for the Senate Finance Committee will be on Tuesday, March 21st at 9 a.m. The committee will hold one hearing, will hold its first hearing on a piece of legislation that will be introduced and referred to the committee on the floor at the floor session later this morning, pertaining to the POMV split and the permanent fund dividend. That, we are adjourned. 9:23 or 10:23.